Well, at the BizNews conference 2 weeks ago, Johnny Copeland, who is the chief executive of HCI, a company that owns a business called Impact Oil and Gas, told us that there was a big constitutional court hearing that had taken many years to get to that was coming out on the Friday. Well, that Concord hearing did come out on the Friday. It didn't end the way that he hoped it would. We are talking today to get some context on this from Niall Cramer. He is the executive director of OPASA. Now, OPASA, you'll tell me in a moment just exactly what that stands for, but they represent companies like Sasol, Petro SA, Total, Africa Energy Corporation, and the two protagonists in that big court action, Shell and Impact Oil and Gas. Now, good to be talking with you to get some context on that court decision, because it's kind of the end of the road now. It's a constitutional court, and they say, no, you cannot go ahead with drilling off or even trying to find out if there is oil off the Wild Coast. But before we get there, OPASA, what exactly does it stand for?
Good morning, Alec. It's OPASA is the Offshore Petroleum Association of South Africa. As you said, represents the 10 companies that are looking to drill offshore, for which I am the spokesperson. Now, there are offshore drilling typically takes place 100, maybe 150 kilometers offshore in the deep ocean. There are some close onshore plays as well. And in our reckoning, the size of the prize that is out there is the geology, regardless of what courts or anyone else might say and how those views change over time, they are unlikely, the geology is not going to change. So the size of the prize that is out there is very, very significant potentially. And we need to know what that is so we can make good decisions. Now, you referenced the court judgments, and there were two judgments over 2 days, one on the West Coast, one on the East Coast, and they went in very different directions. But both of them were essentially about process. The one on the West Coast was about the degree of frivolous litigation that could take place from activists on a serial basis again and again. And then the one on the East Coast, which you have just referenced, was the Concord one. And that found against the applicants on the basis of the amount of consultation. So for me, the key takeaway here is that the judgments we have are about process, not about whether we need energy, what form that energy should take. But if the processes are followed, then there's no reason not to continue. Let me give you a practical example. 11B, 12B, which is the area off Mussel Bay, which has already been discovered, has already been proven, that impact assessment and public participation has, they just announced yesterday that they would be restarting a new one on that.
All of this is very important. We've had at BizNews, we've been following this closely ever since James Lorimer, who is the DA spokesman on mining, made this a particular area obvious. In fact, if you go and have a look at the parliamentary records, you'll find that he has one share in his portfolio. He told us this at a conference. And that one share is Kinetiko, which is oil and gas discovery in Mpumalanga, which perhaps you can, it's not really in your remit, but maybe you could share some thoughts on that too. But what he was telling us was that the resources that exist off South Africa's coastline are the equivalent of the diamond fields in Kimberley at that time, or the gold fields of Wits Gold Basin, and that it could transform South Africa. So we, as a BizNews, being a business publication, have thought, why isn't this happening? What is going on here? Why is it that Namibia, who've got the same geology, are going ahead and have been described as the most prospective district for oil and gas in the world. And then just to the south of there, it's sterilization all the way through until you get to Mozambique, who are also similar geology, who are really booming. So now help us understand basic terms for South African citizens who are looking at a country that is desperate to get economic growth, desperate to get people in jobs, and actually desperate to get our debt down. Why this is at a situation, or was Lorimer exaggerating?
Lorimer was not exaggerating. This, in my view as well, is also potentially as big as mining was for South Africa. As you know, it's still the main driver over many years of the economy, and oil and gas could be a complete catalyst for South Africa. We're struggling along at 1%, barely getting to that. Our peers in the developing world are getting 3+% economic growth. This could provide, in the event of all plays being activated, significantly more than that. Let me just give you some of the numbers here. For I know in those who will remember these things, Mosgas, the old Petrese play, was 1 trillion cubic feet of gas off the south coast. Now, to date, 10 have been discovered, but there are potentially 260 trillion cubic feet of gas plus 25 billion barrels of oil potential. Now, that is from the west coast, south coast, east coast, and onshore. And the piece that you referenced is called the Orange Basin, which has been proven in Namibia. The majority of that undersea basin is in South African waters, same geology. And you everyone sees that Namibia now is the hottest development destination and investment destination in Africa. And we have the same geology. Potentially, we could have huge investment coming into South Africa from what are the largest players. Now, while there's often objections to those players, or people say that we don't want them, the fact of the matter is we need energy. There is no prosperous, productive, comfortable society anywhere in the world ever that doesn't have good, reliable energy. And everybody knows how we've been struggling with energy. Yes, it's been okay for the past year or so. A lot of that is because solar has been put on people's roofs, factories have closed, smelters have closed.
No, we know all of this. Seriously, we know all of this. I don't think you're preaching to the converted here. I want to know why. Why is it that South Africa has not got its act together? We know the case is case closed on an economic perspective, but what the heck is going on here that we aren't drilling?
Well, it might be case closed, but if you look at, for example, Namibia again, it was not that difficult for people to become enthused, for a vision to be developed, and perhaps some of the differences here are around leadership. And the style of leadership in the Namibian case, the oil and gas plays have been pulled directly into the president's office. They get presidential attention. That we don't have that. We have the right noises being made, and certainly the minister is making all the right statements and is very articulate and verbally supportive, but it's not following through into action. Now, our situation is a bit more complicated. The economy here is more complex, but our activity exists under three acts, not as it is in Namibia under one. So we are under what is the MPRDA, the old act, which will soon become the UPRDA, the upstream bill. It's under the National Environmental Act, the Coastal Management Act, and all of these have processes that need to be followed and different departments that are running them. So there is bureaucracy behind driving all of this. But perhaps a bigger reason is that it's not a well-understood industry. And although there are many people in private in the industry who are able and willing to give input into what policy should be, what the regulations should be, how they should be activated, those are not being welcomed. And the depth of experience in the DNA of oil and gas is not that deep in South Africa. It's not like a Norway or the US or the UK or Australia or anywhere, many other countries. And that depth of understanding is really important to understand, to have a good feel for what this activity could bring to the economy. So there's perhaps inertia, perhaps lack of understanding, perhaps some resistance to bringing experience and private sector into government. Another reason would be the cycles. Oil and gas is a long cycle investment, whereas an election cycle is typically 4 years. We're talking about a 10-year plus cycle on this kind of investment. But it's a huge challenge for us, not being heard, not being welcomed into the room with what undoubtedly, as you've referenced, is perhaps the biggest catalyst we've got, is a clear and present opportunity.
It's actually quite extraordinary, and thank you for unpacking it in that way. Because if you go back decades now, the late Tony Twine wrote a very strong pro-fracking piece for Econometrics. And I remember at the time there was a lot of debate about it. And Tony, who was highly respected as an economist, said that this would produce hundreds of thousands of jobs. Fracking, this is onshore in the Karoo. And then there were certain interests who weren't too keen on that to happen. And we know that that's been sterilized. But this is now offshore, which is vastly bigger than what we could have had in the Karoo. And yet again, it's been sterilized, or it appears to be sterilized. So what's going to break that logjam now?
Well, I think the West Coast judgment does partly begin to break that with, frivolous, vexatious sorts of challenges coming in serial from activists, lots of misinformation, asymmetric discussions. And that, yes, you can put some of that blame at the door of industry with coming to meetings with a lot of technobabble and activists coming with an entirely different conversation. But the fact of the matter is we're going to need the energy. And I think that it is important that we all start to have a more responsible, open conversation and put more symmetry into the conversation. This is not about winning the battle. There is no battle. Somebody wins the battle, we lose the war. The fact of the matter is we're all going to need the advantages that come here. You spoke about Tony Twine. I remember that study. I was involved at the time. And Tony makes a big point in that, and it applies to the offshore industry as well. It's not so much the jobs in the industry. It's the jobs in the downstream effects of having good, reliable, abundant energy.
Now I'm wondering about the Wild Coast. Did anyone really talk to the people in the Wild Coast? Anyone who's driven through that area will see. Sure, there's money that's sent back from the guys who are from the area who work in the cities. But generally speaking, it's not exactly a wealthy part of the country. Now, you would imagine that if billions of dollars were to be invested there, it could transform that part of the country. Did anyone talk to them ahead of this judgment, which now means, well, I suppose they have to start from scratch again, and that could be the way South African law goes, a long, long time before anything happens?
They did. However, Impact did this, over 10 years ago. And then that play went over to Shell, and who are the owners of that. So the court basically said in that interim, more should have been done. And that, I think, is potentially the nub of this. What does more mean? Who are stakeholders? And you're referencing, people who are living at the coast who are not living a great quality of life. And you know, is a stakeholder who is in the in a local artisanal fishing community the same as somebody who is running a smelting plant up in Mpumalanga somewhere that would benefit from having good, reliable energy? And I don't think these matters have been properly unpacked. If you look at the amount of forex that goes out for oil and gas that is imported into the country, the upside of having that energy security, that indigenous oil and gas is huge, and the benefit is there for everyone. I think it is Guyana who have had huge success with their exploration production lately over the past 5-10 years. But they have a slogan behind that around a good life for all. And it's that kind of vision, I think, that we are lacking here. The detail we can get to, but if we are so entrenched in our existing positions around environment or jobs or whatever it might be, we need to find a common ground and a common language, a way to talk to each other and a common vision. And that simply is not there yet. We have some way to go. That's a leadership issue.
What do you mean by that, leadership issue?
I think that the president should be taking the lead, and the president should be stepping up, talking about this, garnering support, indicating the economic upside. And people like Treasury, the fiscus, should be looking at and talking about the potential inward investment upside. When you look at the kind of billions of dollars that would come into the economy off oil and gas, you only have to look at, you know, a Norway, for example, as an excellent example of what it can do for everyone in the country. So that's the sense in which I mean it's a leadership issue. The oil and gas projects are listed in the president's presidential projects, but we're not seeing action behind that. You know, and it flows through to even smaller things like the promise of a one-stop shop. Now, the amount of authorizations and so on that explorers have to go through are huge. And that they don't come here to enjoy the bureaucracy. They come here to explore and potentially then to produce. And that one-stop shop that was promised should be active and working, but it's not.
We've seen the impact on the Mozambican economy and the looming impact on the Namibian economy. And there you're talking about 20-30% larger as a result of the taxes that are going to go in. I think in Mozambique, it's going to double their tax income. So everybody benefits when you have a resource, but it's not a hard question. And this is kind of what baffles me. It's not a hard story to tell. If South Africans were told today what gold has done to this country, how it's uplifted a real backward Boer state as it was then into a modern economy, and they've got the same opportunity, would they have left the gold in the ground back then? Or would they have exploited it? Or indeed, if you can then extrapolate that to your oil and gas, would you just leave it there because somebody believes that it's an environmental threat? Or would you look for ways to do it in an environmentally friendly manner? I mean, it doesn't seem like a hard story to tell, but there's such resistance. And that's what I can't get my head around. Are there bad actors who are wanting the oil price to stay high or wanting South Africa to fail, who might be behind all of this? Or is that just a conspiracy theory?
There are many conspiracy theories around that. We are going to need all forms of energy. Where people talk about conspiracy theories around renewables actors wanting it all to go that way. The fact of the matter is we're going to need all the forms of energy that we, and all forms are not going to be, it's not going to be one size fits all. To come back to your gold analogy, if we were to look ahead, let's say we'd never found gold, there'd never been mining, and you suddenly had to go through a whole lot of processes and impact assessments and public participation processes to start mining diamonds or gold or even for coal. You can imagine how tricky that is going to become and how people are going to dig in over relatively small local interests without a well-articulated vision of what that bigger picture could do for everybody. And to me, that's the policy issue, is to untangle these policies, align them all to align all of these acts and regulations to each other, but more importantly, to put that bigger vision out there that everybody is going to benefit from. We must stop fighting for short-term positions.
Yeah, it's a very interesting point you make there, and we can see why so many people in South Africa are saying, damn it, let's just be like the Chinese and drive ahead and make the country more prosperous. But I like to close always on a more positive note, Niall, and you mentioned the West Coast. Now, I didn't know about the West Coast judgment, and I would suggest that many in the BizNews tribe don't know about it either. Please take us through that story and why it is well, obviously it's more optimistic than the East Coast judgment, which we've covered in some depth, but why it is a pointer in the right direction.
So the High Court in the Western Cape found in favor of the industry, indicating that it in fact had done the consultation, it had presented good information, and that activists who were challenging the industry and wanted to put a stay onto further activity were not doing it basically in good faith. And the spray and pray approach was criticized very heavily by the court. So and again, that's one of the court was there talking about process, and that was exactly the same matter with the Transkei judgment. They're both about process, but the future is still there. The geology won't change, and our opportunity still exists. Now, I know you want to end on an optimistic note, but here is something that must be considered. Investors like this have options around the world. They're not going to stay forever and be, you know, tied up in court and have to deal with all of these objections. And while they are still here, we need to make them welcome, provide something that is financially attractive, that is easy to navigate, or there are other options for them.
Now, that's the reality of life, isn't it? Capital is cowardly, and it will go to where it is made to feel most welcome. And we as South Africans should be mindful of that. It's something that seems to have got lost in translation somewhere. But Niall Kramer, lovely talking with you. I'm sure we're going to be talking more into the future, because this is just such a big opportunity that we cannot ignore it for any longer, given where South Africa finds itself. And maybe with a government of national unity, there will be more drive towards economic realities that we need to be embracing, rather than, well, some of the narrative that can often confuse the picture. Niall Kramer is the national spokesperson of OPASA. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com. Start your day a step ahead. BizNews Insider. It delivers the business stories that matter every morning straight to your inbox, sharp, fast, and free. Subscribe now.